And welcome to Nightlock. This is the podcast dedicated to the Hunger Games series by Suzanne Collins. My name is Matt.
And my name is Kira.
And we are your hosts for this podcast. We can't even describe to you how excited we are to get this up and running.
We're so ecstatic. It's going to be awesome.
Before we begin, I would just like to inform you guys that our podcast contains major spoilers about the book. So if you have not finished reading the first book, The Hunger Games, please do not listen to this podcast. The next two books, Catching Fire and Mockingjay, will not have any spoilers until we get to those books in our chapter analysis.
So we're going to have a couple different segments on this podcast, and we're going to do a few today, but we're kind of have more as we go along with the episodes. So the first one is obviously going to be news. And this is the segment we call Panem Post. And every episode we'll be discussing news about the Hunger Games series, mostly about the movie since they're currently filming that in North Carolina. Casting is a huge news bit, so we're thinking of having that be a special episode where we only discuss the casting, so we'll have a lot more time for that, and we'll be able to cover lots of actors and express our opinions on how they'll fit the character. It'd also be weird to criticize them if you as listeners don't really know us yet. So you'll get
and
to know us.
And in due time, you'll get to know how insane and crazy we are.
Yeah.
So we'll get on to that.
So the first bit of news is Danny Elfman and T-Bone Burnett.
Yeah. Burnett.
Has been announced as the composers. And so this was confirmed in a press release. And they said Elfman and Burnett will be collaborating on the film score, with Burnett also serving as the film's executive music producer, producing songs for the film and soundtrack. Said Lionsgate's head of film music, Tracy McKnight, of the musical Dream Team, assembled on behalf of the film. The Hunger Games is such a special property. It has worldwide mass appeal, but is also sophisticated, cerebral, soulful, and rebellious. We need a composer who can translate these qualities musically, and we have not one, but two incredible artists, an absolute thrilling first-time ever collaboration. So, what's your opinion, Matt, of this team? Do you think, as kind of if for those of you that don't know, which none of you would, Matt is really into orchestra, and he is first chair for his orchestra that he's in, and he plays clarinet, so don't be too modest.
I think it's personally, I don't know these two composers, but during all movies you always need to have certain scenes that require certain music,
right?
Such as you have for example fight scenes, you need intense music. You have romantic scenes with Katniss and Peeta, you need calming music that can keep the audience in awareness. And what Tracy was saying is that she has two great composers who understand this, and that they don't have one idea in their head, but they can also work together to create more ideas. It can be the same with working with the Harry Potter aspects,
yeah,
that they have not one composer, but they have multiple composers throughout the movies. And so I think as a good match, it's good to have two composers.
They can kind of balance each other out,
exactly,
and kind of keep each other in line. But actually, we have two clips here of each of their work, just to kind of give you a insight, kind of. Elfman had done composed for Alice in Wonderland, and I found this clip on YouTube, and it's I thought it was pretty good for The Hunger Games, so we'll see what you think.
That's just a small clip. I have not heard this before. I mean, I've seen the movie, but I didn't actually get to pay attention to the music. And that sounded fit for Alice in Wonderland.
Yeah, and I think that parts of it, kind of Hunger Games, like kind of the beginning of the kind of dark kind of
minuscule.
And everything.
It's like you think about it, and you think of the small beats with the music, and it goes right into thinking of that you're in the woods.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, kind of her, like, running, like, in the beginning of the book we're going to talk about. We're actually covering chapter one today, but in the beginning of the book when she's kind of going out to see Gale for the first time and everything, not for the first time, but for the first time as readers experiencing it, that's kind of what I pictured, like, the beginning scene, so. Okay.
And then this is Burnett.
Yeah, T-Bone Burnett, and he had composed in a team for Crazy Heart.
Hearts on the loose. You rolled in silver with nothing to lose. This ain't no place for the weary kind.
Now there's the part where you have the romance between Katniss and Peeta. Usually most movies have it where the two romantic characters are talking, and then the music starts playing, and then it gets the whole romantic.
And, yeah.
And if, I don't know about you, but if I was listening to that, I would be thinking of them in the cave.
Yeah, exactly what I was thinking. So, like, when, it was Peeta was hurt, and she was kind of tending to him, like, right when they got the stew, and they were, had some sort of stew, yeah. And they were kind of relating to each other. Like, I imagine kind of that going on. It's funny how we both thought that. I wonder what you guys thought. Yeah, so we'll see how they turn out, and good luck to them. Okay, so the next bit of news definitely goes out to you guys. The Hunger Games crew is looking for extras whose hair can be dyed crazy colors or cut, like, crazy angles and all kinds of kind of image. Their appearance would be definitely weird. So, they made a Facebook post, and they wrote, "Calls, booking, fittings have begun for Artemis. Reminder, we will be booking and calling through August. We'll be booking in groups. We do need 50 folks, so we'll be honest. Let us go all, totally all out on the hair, be it an extreme cut or extreme color, which may be permanent, style, or everything listed." So, knowing this, definitely very exciting for us, and, that's all taking place in North Carolina. I think most of the filming is taking place in North Carolina.
Yes.
So what do you think these extras will be used for?
Oh, gosh. I think they're going to be used for being in the Capitol. Because...
that's what I was kind of thinking. Like, a big shot. Like, when they have the parade and they're coming in.
Yeah.
Kind of, like, have all, like, those crazy... because they all have, like, crazy hair. Like, Effie Trinket with her pink hair and different colors and... you know,
yeah, even Peeta was describing it to Katniss about how they all look different from when they're normally used to in District 12.
Yeah.
Because it's more a modern place and they're not used to this kind of stuff. So to them in the Capitol, it would be so much more modern.
Yeah.
It's like normal for them. Where if we're looking at Katniss and Peeta, like,
yeah, they all have, like, everyone has, like, tattoos and, you know, we're... in our society, there are some tattoos, but definitely a lot more in the Capitol.
Yes.
So...
if you guys are interested in that, you can contact the Hunger Games.
Yeah, there's actually, we'll post it on our website, which we'll be talking about at the end of the episode. We'll post actually, I think I already did. Yeah, I already posted it under the news section. That's the, if you go under our website, it's under District 2, Pan Am Post.
Right.
And so you can, there's actually a link at the end of the post that I talked about, the crazy hair and all that. It says Facebook post, you know, click here, so. That's, you know, I guess where you'd find more information.
Yep.
So, and a quick note, there's all obviously a lot of news that's going on since the first episode, so we just chose a couple, we don't want to have the podcast be too long, you know, trying to get into all this. So, our last note is the Hunger Games will not make an appearance at the Comic-Con 2011, and they said that this was due to actor scheduling conflicts, and if they were to appear there, there would not be enough real stars who'd be able to attend to make it worthy. So that's kind of a sad point for people that already have their tickets, because I know I saw a few people on Facebook that already had their tickets, so we're not going to be attending. But
no, but I'm sure they'll make definitely a lot more appearances.
Yeah, probably next year they're definitely going to
be there.
Once
they are done with filming,
yeah,
the cast will definitely
Well, of course, they could be filming next summer, too. Hopefully they'll pump all the... I mean, I don't know. Like, it's it'd be good if they pump all the movies out, but again, we want to make sure they, you know, take their time and do
exactly
a good
job. You want to keep audience suspense.
Yeah.
So you want to have, okay, this is the first movie, another year later we have the second movie.
Right.
And then it goes on like that to keep the audience more interested in it.
Hopefully it's like a year between them. Because
if you have Hunger Games come out in March, all of a sudden Catching Fire is out in November.
Yeah, it's probably too rushed.
The audience is like, wait a second, I have not gotten to see the whole, I have not even read Catching Fire yet.
Yeah.
So it would make more sense to do that.
Okay, and our next segment, moving along, is Through the Eyes of Katniss Everdeen. And this is going to be pretty much our main segment going along with the news. And we're going to be analyzing the books by chapters, and we summarize what happened in the chapter along with interpretations of the chapters, or the characters within the chapter, foreshadowing future events, and our thoughts, questions, and comments. In future episodes, we will probably each do one an episode. I'll be doing even, and Matt will be doing odd. But since this is our first, we're just going to start with chapter one. So, to jump right into it, we open the whole series in chapter one of Hunger Games with Katniss waking up and mentions the Reaping. So, do you think this was a good way to grip people into the book?
I think, well, if you're writing a story like this, it's called The Hunger Games, so it's going to have a big emphasis title. You want to know what that's about.
Right.
And it's already going into showing who Katniss is. Saying, like, she's not this little mushy girl who does things, who just wheezes into things. She says it like it is, and that's how she feels about it. It's not really giving a sense of, well, they have this reaping thing that goes on every year. No, it's a reaping that you can pick for against you, well, you cannot decline it.
Right, but at the beginning of the chapter, I think it's the first page, she just says the reaping. So it's kind of like, I guess, would you say you're, like, automatically intrigued? Like, what is this reaping? Like, what is she doing? Like,
that could be a method that Susan Collins was trying to put in.
Right.
Saying that, well, here's a reaping. Well, what's the reaping? Continue.
You're automatically hooked in, kind of, like, exactly. You want to know more information.
You don't want to give too much information, but you don't want to give too little.
Right.
So.
What do you think would have made a better start? I mean, I thought that was a pretty good start. Like, the whole first chapter really, like, it puts you right in their world, but at the same time, they're not giving you too much information that you're confused on what's happening. I thought that it was pretty, like, as series go, it's definitely far up there in beginnings, you know.
If I was to start a story like that, that is, like you said, that's a great way to start the story. And I don't think there would be a better way, because you're automatically showing Katniss as a character.
And you're introducing so many characters, but it flows nicely, you know, all the main characters.
I mean, if you could...
Except for
PETA. Yeah. If you could start out Katniss in the woods with Gale, that's just too many things going on at once. Because you have Katniss talking about her love for being in the woods. Then you have Gale there, who she hasn't mentioned is her best friend. It's just too much information going on.
Right.
It's just a better way to keep the reader interested.
And so Katniss describes her family and how Buttercup is another mouth to feed. So right away we see that she has a different role in the family, and she takes on the responsibility a parent would normally. And so up until she mentions her long dark braid, did you think she was a boy?
No.
No.
I absolutely did not think that.
I kind of thought she was a boy because she didn't say anything that would... She didn't say her name. So, you know, Katniss, it's like, okay, that's not a boy. But up until it was the second page, near the top, I thought she was a boy. Just the way she was kind of relating, and I guess because she's just so tough, I guess. I don't know if anybody else thought that. I don't know if I'm just the only weird one here, but...
I understand where you're coming from with that. Yeah. But then again, the name just gives right away Katniss. Who?
But she didn't say her name until, like, I don't know, third page, I think? It's second or third page. Like, she talked about her... long dark braid before she said her name, so.
Okay.
Well, yeah.
I'll have to
maybe we'll put that up as a poll or something on the website. Did you think Katniss was a boy?
All right.
Probably not. So, when the father is introduced, it is sudden and startling, while at the same time to the point, and it lacked emotion and was just informative. The passage was, "My father knew and he taught me some before he was blown into bits in a mine explosion. There was nothing even to bury. I was 11 then. 5 years later, I still wake up screaming for him to run." So right after finding about her father, Katniss goes right back into explaining about the woods. So I think that right away kind of showed a lot about her character. So what did you see, like, what did you notice in her character when you read this?
Well, looking at that, it kind of shows that that aspect of her father is Katniss's weakness.
Right.
It's that she's too scared to talk about it, but then at the same time, she has to talk about it.
I think she kind of puts up this wall, and she's like, I'm not going to go there. I have to be strong for my family and, you know, what family is left, because she's the caretaker, and she's the bringing home the bacon, you know, like, literally. you know, she's the one that has to take care of her family because her mom is just not stepping up to the plate.
Exactly. So if she other would explain it anyway, it would have gone to this whole sad story where she was saying, I love my father, he was the perfect man, I looked up to him. She can't say it because they're saying that this is defamation of my character.
Yeah.
Saying that this is not who I am. I need to be the strong person for my family so that they can look up to me.
Yeah.
Especially for Prim, who is just 12 years old and who looks up to her older sister.
Yeah, definitely. The government is introduced as corrupt, as the peacekeepers are a part of the government, and this is a passage, turn a blind eye to the few of us who hunt, because they're as hungry for fresh meat as anybody is. This one line brings up a lot about, this one line brings up the plot line of the series, and later how they rebel against it. So this kind of, this is first where they bring it up, and later in the chapter, Katniss refers to her younger years, where she would blur out things against the Capitol, and I thought that this kind of foreshadowed how she will rebel against the Capitol in the Hunger Games when her and Peter take the Nightlock berries and place them in their mouth. Kind of how we start seeing how the government is corrupt, and even in this first chapter we're seeing how the whole plot kind of is starting to unfold, and there's so much packed into this first chapter while still having it flow nicely and being an easy read. You know, it's not difficult.
Even when Katniss is, she explained the reaping, but it's still, the question is still rising in her head as well. You're talking about this corrupt state of your Panem. What
right.
is the reaping? And maybe you can find the connection to maybe the reaping.
Right, you can kind of start seeing how
exactly.
they're tied together and how, like, the beginning it's kind of giving you all these details, and then the reader's kind of putting them together. All right, what does this have to do with each other? Why are they in the woods? What is this reaping? Like, the government, like, it's all kind of coming together.
And that's kind of how her and Gale had that connection, because Gale was definitely not fond of the Capitol or Panem either.
Yeah, she even said in the first chapter that, you know, he would just kind of
shout things out
in the woods, and she kind of was like, well, what's the point of that? That's not going to get us anywhere. But, you know, she said it's better him do it there than, you know, in the district.
Exactly.
So, so Katniss goes on talking about how only the bold trespasses into the woods because of the predators and threat from the peacekeepers. And then she goes on explaining how her family live in the poorest part of District 12 called the Seam, and they struggle to get by with little food. And a side note, District 12 has around 8,000 residents, which was mentioned a little bit later in the chapter, but it kind of fit in here. So, I thought it's bigger than I imagined. I thought, like, you know, when I first read it, I didn't see that detail. So I was thinking there was more, like, I don't know, like, 2,000 or something? What were you thinking?
I was thinking, basically, if Panem is supposed to be surrounded against the whole North America.
That's true, yeah.
So, obviously, I was thinking there's going to be more in District 12, especially if there's a lack of food. Because
yeah.
there's so many people that they cannot feed everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the first time I'm reading this, too.
Yeah.
And I think, yeah, it makes a lot of sense.
It makes sense, but while reading it, I never thought of it as 8,000.
No, I thought there was going to be definitely a lot more.
You thought there was more? Okay, I thought there was less, so there's definitely, you know, different opinions out there.
But it also can show that Katniss, how these 8,000 residents, they seem to be really close together.
Yeah.
Because they're all trying to do the best they can.
And physically, they're probably close together. They don't probably have big yards like most of us do, kind of. They're
yeah.
all kind of packed in there.
And that's how Katniss comes to Miller to get all the food that she needs. She,
yeah.
She's friendly with the mayor of the district.
Right.
So that's
well, his daughter, kind of more.
He,
I mean, yeah, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So but. It's just, that's surprising to read, but also it's kind of understandable.
Right. Since there's, you know, 12 or 13 districts, whatever they said, there was 13 and one was obliterated. So, yeah. And it also shows, kind of going back to how she said only the bold go into the woods. And she basically, like, you get the feeling from the book that it's really only her and Gale that go into the woods. Like, others will go into the meadow, always within sight of District 12, but I think her and Gale are two people out of 8,000 that go hunting. Like, that's what I would assume. Would you assume the same? Yeah. So that also shows part of her character. Her and Gale are very strong, very bold. They're not afraid to kind of put themselves out there and risk their own lives for their family. I think for them, it's all about their family.
And that was that's a quality that Katniss used, or like an aspect that she used to survive in the arena. She was saying, I'm doing this for my family.
Yeah, and her whole aspect and attitude in the Hunger Games was, I can't die for my family. Not because of her. They're both very selfless people, I think, you know.
Yeah, she is no way conceited.
Yeah. I think she's one of the most selfless characters I've read, you know, all reading. And
I think the whole Peter game picked for it is also a good tactic, too, for him. He's good with being in the woods as well, but I think Gale would have been a better match.
Yeah, he definitely would have. They would have
stuck together.
Yeah.
And personally, I think Gale would have had no problem doing... I think Katniss and Gale would have no problem doing the romance thing.
Yeah.
Because she's known him, and obviously...
But even, like, I mean, I start talking about, actually, here, how Gale is introduced as the only person who I can be myself. The sight of him waiting there brings on a smile. And Gale is kind of conveyed as Katniss' solid rock, and it's her escape from the hard reality that she faces in her everyday life. And Gale's, I think they're kind of both each other's escape. And, where was I going with this? I don't even know. what were you saying before now? I lost it. I don't know. You were saying, how Gale would be better in the woods.
Yes.
Yeah, so they kind of both, here we go. I got it. How they're both kind of, they help each other, you know? So, yeah, that was my big point.
What I was trying to say is the same, that, like, if they were partnered together, they would form an ally, and they would...
Right, okay, yeah.
So, like, Gale would be a good hunter.
Yeah.
Well, Katniss is familiar with the...
But then you have the whole aspect of them killing each other. Like, they would kill themselves,
I think her and Gale would have done the same thing her and Peter did.
Yeah, definitely.
I really think they would have, because they're that bold to do that thing.
Yeah. They wouldn't be afraid to kind of show the Capitol that, hey, you're not the only one in charge, you know. There's, you know, all the district combined are a lot more manpower than the Capitol, right? Like, that's what I always thought.
Well,
Capitol's definitely smaller than all the districts combined.
Exactly, but if you look back at the rebellion, it was 13 against 1.
Yeah.
And they still got destroyed.
Right. And so that kind of, you know, the rebellion whole aspect is definitely a huge part of the series. We're not going to give anything away, just it's a huge part of the series. So kind of keep that in mind as you, if you're rereading Hunger Games or, you know, as the other books go. So, moving on. Gale's pet name for Katniss is Catnip. And so, that shows how close they are and how the setting in the woods is much more relaxed compared to the district. If they were both in the district, he probably wouldn't call her Catnip in front of other people.
Right.
I don't know. I thought that kind of showed how the woods is their getaway and, you know, everything's better in the woods for them.
Yeah.
So, Gale is a lighthearted joker that takes the pressure off of feeding both Katniss's and Gale's family. So, do you think that knowing everything you do about the first book, do you think that Gale thinks of Katniss as more like a sister or love interest?
I would think it'd be a love interest, because if you remember, her sitting in the, what was it called? It was probably in one of the buildings in District 12 that you go before you go off into the Capitol. Remember how she was with her mother and with Fred?
Right before they got to see their family before they left.
And then Gale
the
came
games.
In and he was about to say something to her. He was about to say something to her.
Yeah.
And then he got pulled away. I was thinking that he was going to say, Katniss, I'm in love with you.
Yeah, that's the one unanswered question that I think every fan wants to know. What would have Gale said? only we could find out, you know?
I mean, it's kind of like a kind of typical love story. You have the best friends fall in love with each other.
Yeah.
Because I think that's not what Susan was trying to intend to have. She was probably just trying to get the audience to think that, the readers. But then
to plant that seed in their head.
And then she introduced Peeta, which opened a whole nother set of feelings with Katniss.
And more complications, too.
Exactly. Because then when she
had a love triangle going on, but...
And through the whole Hunger Games, while she's kissing Peeta, she's thinking about...
She's
thinking of Gale, how is Gale going to react to this?
Yeah, because everything's on camera. I mean, I can't imagine that, you know? It'd be so hard, but... yeah, but I think... I mean, they both kind of relate to each other like a married couple and trying to support their families and... Gale even jokes about, or more than jokes about, he's kind of serious about running away, but Katniss brings up they have too many kids to look after. So, they didn't, and then she says afterwards, that she didn't mean their siblings, she doesn't say this to Gale, but to the reader, that meaning their siblings plus their helpless moms. So just kind of the way they're like, oh, we have too many kids. Like, they do act like an old married couple, you know, sometimes.
Yeah, they do act, well, I would consider old married, because they do bicker sometimes, and they do have their little quarrels.
Yeah. And now, Katniss gets mad at him when he brings up having kids, and she expresses there's no romance between them, and she's kind of like, why is he bringing up this now? He's never done it before, you know, we're supposed to be hunting buddies and whatever. And she even explains to herself that, quote, Gale won't have any trouble finding a wife, and goes on that he's good-looking, and ending with, quote, it makes me jealous, but not for the reasons people would think. Good hunting partners are hard to find.
No,
that just made me burst out laughing when I read that. I'm like, you're pretty much trying to convey to yourself, oh, I'm not in love with him, no.
I think she's just trying to cover up to the reader, because remember her saying that she's a strong person, she doesn't want to show any weakness at all.
Yeah, she's just trying to convince herself that, oh, I don't need anybody else, I don't need a man in my life.
Like, I don't want you guys to think that I'm some weakling who falls in love with someone that's equally strength as I am. She goes, no, I'm trying to say that he's a really good hunting partner.
She's independent. She doesn't need anybody else. You know, she's just a good hunting partner. He's just a good hunting partner.
Which is completely, I wouldn't know. I just don't think that. She's not trying, she's trying to convince herself that he's good hunting, but really she does feel
I think she likes him, definitely.
She not likes him, she's in love with him.
Okay.
I'm serious.
We both have different, you know, views on the loving when you're 16. She's 16, right, in this book?
I think she's 16 or 17.
Yeah. No, because Gale's 2 years older and he's 18 in this book.
Oh, okay, then she's 16.
She's 16 in this book. So the reaping is referred to multiple times, and it first is explained as, we have to be standing in the square at 2 o'clock waiting for the names to be called out. That's on page 9. She also says that everyone is supposed to celebrate, and many do, as their kids are spared. However, the families, quote, will figure out how they will survive the painful weeks to come. So two families will figure out that. And that's on page 10. So Katniss points out how unfair the reaping system is, with the poor getting the worst of it. And she explains how once you turn 12, you're entered once, and the next year twice, and so on, up until you're 19. So 18 is last year. And the catch is that if you're poor, you can buy Tessera, that's right? Tessera. Mm-hmm. Which puts your name in, more for exchange of a year's supply of grain and oil for one person. So one Tessera equals 1 year's supply of grain for and oil for one person. It's cumulative, so at this time, Katniss is entered 20 times, while Gale is, entered around 42. And that's also they can feed their families.
Which also shows, again, bring up their pride of strength and being bold.
Yeah, definitely. That they're willing to basically risk their life. Because if you're in the Hunger Games, I mean, chances are you're going to die, you know?
Yes.
Only one person out of 24 survives, so.
And so that,
it's usually careers that win, too, you know?
Mm-hmm. I was definitely thinking that Gale was going to get picked.
Yeah,
I mean,
me too.
To make sense.
I'm like, okay, well, they're perfect for the part, you know? It's like you're trying out for a movie. Oh, you're perfect for it. Like, they're both perfect for it.
And plus the odds, even kind of described that the odds were against Gale.
Yeah.
There was no possible way that he could not have gotten picked.
Well, if you think about it, if there's 8,000 residents, then what? How many kids would there be?
Probably be about 2,000 kids. Maybe less.
Probably less because, or no, probably around, 2,000. So if you think, all right, so then 1,000 of them would be boys. I mean, that's still a high chance. So that's pretty scary. So, her and Gale succeed in the amount of game they're able to capture, and they head over to the Hob, the black market, in District 12, where Katniss and Gale sell or trade their game that they have hunted in the woods for other food and, like, salt and stuff like that. How do you say this thing? Greasy Say is one of the better customers, so they kind of keep on good terms with her. So, after that, they head over to the mayor's house to sell some strawberries that they had collected in the woods together. And Madge, which is the mayor's daughter, is introduced at this part. And so that's kind of who Katniss tends to hang out with during school, since they both don't have a group of friends. Kind of, they end up with each other. And it's spotted right here. I thought this was really important, that she's wearing a small circular pin of real gold. So, I mean, because we've read the whole book, we know that's the Mockingjay pin.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is the symbol that stands out most in the entire series kind of thing.
Yeah.
So that's not giving anything away, but kind of just that's really important, and that the symbol is placed in the first chapter, it foreshadows the importance of it later on in the first book and even further in the series. So I thought that was just kind of seeing how an author puts together a book, like, they plan all this out. They don't just kind of start writing, usually. They're like, all right, well, this is a symbol, I'm going to plant it here, and kind of, they don't just all of a sudden introduce it. So, you know, I thought that was interesting, just how they first introduced it in the first chapter, you know?
Exactly. So. And, again, I look at the, before I read this, I looked at the cover of the book, and I saw the pin there. I'm like, okay, well, what is this? I had no idea what it was. I read this part, I'm like, oh, that's what the pin is. Then I read it again when it's given to her. I'm like, okay, this is the symbolic thing. It's probably going to be...
And knowing that it's on the front cover, it's like, okay, this is important.
It's going to be it's going to be followed through throughout the entire series. It has to be, because that's the important thing that represents the district and where she feels she belongs.
Right. So, so Katniss arrives back at home to get herself pretty for the reaving. Definitely something she loves to do, get dressed up in frilly and everything. So, one line, also, we're going into foreshadowing again. What am I saying? One line foreshadows the events to follow, and that line is that the unthinkable might happen. And then later it goes on saying, I protect Prim in every way I can, but I'm powerless against the reaping. And I just, like, that was such, I don't know, like a... I don't want to say solid, but, you know, it's just so
strong,
like that quote, that, you know, excerpt.
And it's kind of saying that she's not just saying this. She goes, oh, yeah, I'll protect my little sister. No, she really means that she will protect her sister.
Because she, anything she can do, she's going to protect Prim and her mom. But, she, you know, we see that there's issues between her mom and her, just kind of how tense it is between them. But Prim, she's kind of like... Prim is kind of like her daughter in many ways, you know, like her. She took place of her mom because, you know, when her dad died, her mom completely fell apart and could not kind of put herself back together. So, you know, she really shows again how strong she is, and, you know, I've been saying that too much, but she is, you know, it's like.
I mean, you never really see girl characters other than, like, for example, Hermione Granger.
Yeah. Big Harry Potter fans, Kevin knows.
So you see someone like that is so, like, even a female character.
So strong.
That is so strong like that. Usually you have most stories, the female character gets captured.
Yeah.
And the male goes rescued. No, it's more of a sense that she is the male character.
Yeah.
In a sense. But she does have the femininity in her.
Right.
But she really does have the emotions of a boy. Or not even, just to...
And she's such a good role model for kids that are reading this, and especially girls, because, you know, you're reading this, and you're like, wow, you know, like, she's such a role model. You know, I look up to her, and, you know, and everything. So I thought, you know, definitely commend Susan Collins, you know, round of applause, for creating her. That's, like, awesome. Okay, so the reaping takes place at the town square, and people in the crowd even bet on which kid will get picked. So I thought that was so crude. It's like, but I guess that's just their life, you know? You just have to accept it at some point.
If that's a way to make money to buy food.
That's true. It shows family, you how, you know.
I mean, it tells you how needy they are, but also it makes sense. Like, to have money for your family to survive another day, you're going to take that chance.
Because in this, you know, especially District 12, like other districts not so much, but especially 12, they're the poorest district, and Katniss lives in the poorest part of District 12. So, you know, the whole issues of money, and, you know, they're really going day by day trying to scrounge up some money and everything. So.
Exactly.
Not even money, just food. But so two glass balls hold names, one for boys and one for the girls. And the beginning of the ceremony is where the history of the Hunger Games is explained. And so, as it is every year. And I thought this was interesting because you don't really get a sense of what the background is before the Hunger Games other than in this part. It's really not explained, and it's other than this part. And, I mean, it's just not of that importance. You know, it doesn't matter what happened before. We need to move on, kind of thing.
But that's also why the kind of Panem put it there, the Capitol put it there, to remind everybody that this is what happened to people like you.
Yeah.
You come against us, we destroy you. That's flat out
how it is. But they're also saying that, hey, we saved you. Without us, you'd all be dead anyway. Like, kind of...
So this is like saying that for you to repay us, you will go by what we say.
Right.
And even when the mayor was given this, it has to be a biased history of the nation.
I doubt he wrote this, because the mayor seems like a good guy, like genuinely good guy. But, you know, it's definitely, because it's all televised and, you know, it's
he has
it's all
to
a
say,
script.
Exactly. All the information given to him is definitely biased, because how do we know that District 13 got into the Capitol? Or the districts got into it, but it's never described.
Right.
It's in, they were all killed off in the mountains because they had to climb over the mountain to get to the Capitol.
Right, okay, yeah.
So it's never really described as anyone got in there, but maybe some did.
Right.
Hannah won't explain that because they're saying that we killed you, you did not infiltrate us.
Right. And so basically what the synopsis is for this part is Panem is the nation, the district and the capital make up. Okay, so it's Panem, and then under Panem is, you know, it's like United States,
capital
we have the states.
District.
Yeah. So, okay, I can't talk. I don't know why I make a podcast if I can't talk, but, you know. So this area was once called North America. And the mayor explains that natural disasters took place in a brutal war.
Okay.
So the capital brought peace and stability to these 13 districts. The dark days came, which was the uprising of the districts. 12 were defeated and the 13th obliterated. The Treaty of Treason gave the districts new laws to guarantee peace. The yearly reminder that the dark days must never happen again is the Hunger Games.
That's, yeah.
So, I was thinking, I mean, I don't know about you, but do you think that World War III happened and only select parts of North America survived? Like,
no.
No?
I strongly believe that it could have been a natural disaster.
Natural, like, mostly?
I think it could have been 2000, like, the whole phenomenon of 2012.
So, we'll look forward to the Hunger Games, you know? Whole world's gonna end, you know, end of this year, and then we'll get into the Hunger Games and survive. Hopefully
but
this podcast can keep running.
I think either that or, like Suzanne said, her father was in the Vietnam War, so she either might have wanted to have that war aspect in it, but also she probably wanted to avoid from war.
Yeah.
Putting the war, because it reminds her of her father and everything like that.
Yeah.
Either
but,
way.
I mean, the whole series is about war, you know? So, like,
it's all
defeated
fighting.
Your point, but, you know.
I mean, okay.
All right. Well, I kind of thought it was like World War III, like, you know how, like, you know, we studied history and everything, like World War I and II, and I feel like something happened, like World War III and then natural disasters, and all kind of just was a complete fiasco kind of thing, so.
Okay.
So what do you think happened to start these natural disasters? Like, do you think it was just kind of the Earth, like, I mean, I kind of thought, like, it could be about like, global warming or, like, kind of those emissions that, you know, we're doing, the ice caps melting. Do you think that had to do with it, or it just happened? There's no logical...
Like I said, it could have been natural disasters.
But sometimes, obviously, like, natural disasters, like, happen because, you know, because all our pollution and stuff like that, do you think that might have, you know, made ice caps melting, water levels rising? Because at some point, I don't remember where it was, she mentioned that, like, the water level did rise, and, you know, like, the edge of, you know, North America was kind of lost, and, you know, area was smaller because of it, kind of thing. That's kind of what I thought, like, rereading it, not the first time I read it, but.
I agree with you on that it could have been,
yeah.
It could have been that natural disaster thing. But also, yeah, it could have been war, because, again, you're always going to have what we said, World War I and II, going to be nations that disagree with everything that
right.
another nation does. And so it can be difficult for everyone to come in a good, big peace agreement. So there could have been one time major powers went against each other.
Right.
And they destroyed everything.
Right, yeah.
And then these people were the survivors.
Exactly. Yeah, because, I mean, I think, like, do you think the rest of the world was kind of obliterated, too? Just, like, not by the capital or anything? Because the capital emerged out of this whole disaster, but...
That's what I was thinking. I mean, how can you have just North America be this obliterated part
yeah.
when out the rest of Europe?
I mean, there's so many unanswered questions we're never going to get. I mean, we could always, you know, guess and everything.
And if there are people that are still living in Europe that did not get affected, why aren't they understanding what's going on here?
Yeah.
And trying to
that
stop
also
it?
Might be something that comes up later in the series. And
okay.
Just as a side note, no, I'm just saying, like, just,
okay.
I'm pretending I didn't read the other books, but I've read the whole series, but Matt here has read the first book. I'm not yelling at you, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
We've had issues because he won't read the whole Harry Potter series, but, you
don't
know.
Say that!
message him and tell him to read the series. Okay. Enough Harry Potter. Okay. So, okay, going back to the chapter. At the end of the chapter is defined what these chosen teens or tributes must do. So one boy and girl from each district is placed in a closed-off arena that could hold any type of terrain. So it might be desert, you know, cold.
Snowstorms, thunderstorms, yeah. Anything.
All that.
Just use your imagination.
Yes. So these teens must fight to the death. The last survivor wins, and that their district is showered with gifts of food while others are starving to death. Well, yeah, starving to death. So
that's kind of why the other districts are sort of so well off. Like, yeah. District 1 through 5.
Well, even, I think it's, like, the career districts are 1, 2, and 3, like, kind of about, like, so they're the ones that are doing pretty well off, you know, they're not complaining.
They're trained for it.
Yeah.
Like, if you remember in the book, Clove was so skilled with using knives because she's probably been handling a knife since she was, what, 3?
Yeah.
So, the districts, they're trained for this.
Exactly, yeah.
And District 12 and District 11 thinking, well, they're going to die anyway, so why are we going to waste our time trying to train them?
Well, I think it's also just that, off the top of my head, I can't remember, but districts like 1, 2, and 3, they produce things for the capital, like technology and stuff, so they're a little bit more advanced than District 12 just dealing with coal. So they have more to offer the capital, so the capital kind of, it's like, oh, we're sucking up to you, we're going to give you all these, you know, cool, like, gadgets, and then you can kind of, like, give us stuff so we'll be able to train.
Try to give us an advantage in the arena.
So that our kids aren't going to die as
because
much.
How do you know that the capital is going to be fair on this?
Well, that's the whole point of the series. The capital is not fair. It's all rigged, you know? It's so unfair.
So, like, they're saying, oh, yeah, you guys have fight to your death with everything. But they can still make things happen, such as the big fire that happened. That was trying to
I mean, they could also just hype. End the Hunger Games. That would just kind of solve all these issues.
Yeah, that's not
but,
happening.
Yeah.
So, where else? Okay.
Where am I?
Hey.
So, to make it even worse, the capital forces the people to treat the Hunger Games as a celebration. And, in the end, celebrating their own children fighting and being killed. So, I mean, how much worse can you get? They're going to take your kids that are between the ages of 12 and 18. So, these aren't, like, fully matured kids anyway. You have a 12-year-old, you know? 7th grade in our, you know, country. It's, like, that's just crazy, like, to have them fight to death. Like, you have a little 12-year-old girl, like, Rue, right? She was 12.
No,
fighting against,
yeah.
Yeah, she was 12.
No, she had
fighting
to be
against
14.
Was she 14?
She had to be 12 or 14.
Yeah. Okay. Well, one of those. You can correct us and send us an email. But, yeah, she's whatever, young age, not even at the high school age yet, and she's fighting against these 18-year-olds who have bulked up and are ready to win the Hunger Games. It's just, everything is
so,
unfair.
So, like, try to picture Rue against a guy like Thresh.
Yeah.
That's just,
it's just
like,
and
a
also
boulder against a bug.
Picture someone, yeah. And picture someone that you know that's around that age. It's like, imagine putting them in the arena with someone that you know is, like, 18. Like, it just,
I mean, and try to imagine killing somebody like that. Like,
yeah.
They haven't fully
if
lived their lives.
If you're 18 and you're trying to, yeah, like, you're trying to fight for your life. It's like, all right, now you're going to kill this 12-year-old. And you might know that 12-year-old. That could be your sister. Like, you don't...
It's just
so screwed up. It makes me so angry.
It's just an unfair...
Love the series, but it does, you know, make me mad. Okay. So, and then Haymitch is introduced. Haymitch Abernathy?
Yeah?
Yeah. Are we going with that? Okay.
Yeah.
So, the town drunk and the only victor still alive. So, only 2 victors in the history of District 12. So far, and Haymitch is a ripe age of, not really ripe age, more like, he's like 56, I want
to
say.
No, he had to be between his late 50s, early 60s.
Somewhere in there, yeah. So, should have done more research for that. But yeah, so he's somewhere, you know, kind of grandparent age, and so he's the town drunk, and he stumbles onto the stage to present Effie Trinket, who is from the capital, and that's District 12's escort. And she gives everyone a happy Hunger Games, and may the odds be ever in your favor.
I remember reading this book and seeing, like, the...
Oh, do you remember reading it?
No, I mean, like, the scenes with Haymitch and Effie together.
Yeah.
They are the old married couple, to be honest.
Really?
They bickered.
You think they have,
like,
chemistry together?
No, I mean, like, they bickered at each other.
Yeah.
And they laughed with each other. They were just, like, even though Effie found him revolting at sometimes.
Yeah.
She still...
I think she kind of saw through... Because, I mean, the whole reason he's drunk is because he's been through these Hunger Games. He had to kill all these people. Like, to be the victor, you have to kill people. Like, you can't just hide and wait for
and
other people to kill each
other. And he's also
kind
of gotten sick of trying to train these kids when they're going to die anyway.
He gets close to these kids, and then they go into the arena, and he's like, all right, have a nice rest of your life, and then they die. It's like, that has to be the worst job ever. Like, to be District 12's... he's a victor, but...
He has probably a supporter trainer.
You know, he's the trainer for them, and just kind of crazy. But, so he's introduced. And as Effie reaches into the girl's glass ball, Katniss is praying it will not be her. It will not be me. It will not be me. And it isn't. It's her sister, Prim. So, that's how it's left off. I thought... Well, let's see what you thought. So, what do you think that... do you think that Collins left off the chapter in a good place?
Yeah.
Yeah? Yeah, that's
just
it?
Like,
okay.
Just like a flat-out answer, because it makes so much sense. Keep the reader reading. Now, like,
yeah.
Katniss said she's... Now the reader's looking back. Well, Katniss said she's going to protect her sister. What is she going to do now?
Yeah. I thought it was just crazy, amazing chapter. I remember reading this for the first time, like, 2 years ago, because we're juniors now, going into junior year. And so I read this freshman year. And I was just blown away. Like, the first chapter, I was like, I don't want to go to class. I just want to keep reading, like, mm-hmm. you know. So I just thought it was amazing, you know. It definitely hooked us right in.
When she handed me this book, she said, oh, you have to read it. It's going to be great. I'm like, okay, I'm not sure if I'm going to like this. I mean, don't know really what it's
and
about.
And I compared it to Harry Potter. And I've been a Harry Potter fan since I was, like, 6. So I've been a Harry Potter fan for 10 years. And to compare something to Harry Potter, that's... pretty big deal for
and
me, so.
The way my science teacher described it to me, this Hunger Games book, it was something about, she said it, exact quotes, something about a mutated bird.
Yeah, a mutated bird, like,
okay. I'm like, okay, well, that's...
That's not even what it's about, though, so that's kind of weird.
I know, so I'm thinking about this.
Hopefully she's not listening to this.
And I read the first page, I'm like, okay, this is nothing like it.
Yeah.
I finished the first chapter, and I was probably up to 2 in the morning the first night I read it.
Yeah, and you had finals the next day, right?
I had finals the next day.
It was crazy. So... I yelled at him the next day. I'm like, I'm glad you're into this, but, you know, you gotta study. But that's all. If you want to know kind of how this all came about, the podcast and our past with the Hunger Games series, you can go to our website, and we'll be plugging that at the end of the episode. But, yeah, and there's a whole section that I wrote about how it all started, how it began.
And then we haven't gotten to this yet, but we're going to go on and talk about our conceited selves. Stuff about us and everything.
Yeah, you know.
In case you have the time and you have nothing better to do with your life, you'll just read about us.
Yep. So, okay, so that's it for chapter 1. So, that was long. We're 51 minutes in, so... a little longer than I expected, but hey, we got into it, so... we're still testing everything out, so definitely send us your feedback for anything and criticism, you know. Don't be too harsh on us, you know. This is our first podcast, by the way. It's not like we've done other podcasts. First episode of our first podcast. So.
And so, all right. Our next segment is what we call Matt's Melodious Music. That's it.
Should we change the name if you can't
pronounce we'll give it to like that.
Yeah.
So, what I'm going to do is that every episode, I'll play a song by a well-known artist or a Hunger Games fan-made song that connects to the novel. And so then, once I play the song, we will give our interpretations of it, and then I will probably post it on the website so you guys can take a listen and then send us your feedback. So this week, I selected a song titled called The Hunger Games Theme Song by Memphiston. This is from a YouTube fan-made song, and so while I play the song, I want you guys to think about the book and how you pictured it and see how this piece really fits into it. Because while listening to this song, I really had a strong connection with it. So.
What are you doing?
I can't.
Control, and then you click it. I'm going to teach him how to use a computer.
Right? No.
Can you do it? No?
Is it not working?
Just copy and paste it.
Sorry.
We need a little, like, elevator music for this part.
No, Google Docs is just...
You
no!
get half of it. We will be more professional in the future. Yeah. We're on Google Docs, and, you know, all those problems with Google Docs, so...
No, I don't... Okay.
Okay. copy paste up there.
Okay. Sorry, guys. This is just not.
You know computers.
Okay. Let's see if we can get this. So, I think. Oh, shoot. I think, I'll just talk about this a little bit. They, No.
No.
It'd be, the book. Well, the What am I talking about? The song, has a very slow piano entrance, which, kind of gets you thinking just this, romantic kind of aspects of Katniss and Peeta. Here we go. Was a little too long, but you know, it's the first song, so, and I'm sorry about our little technical difficulties there.
We'll be better in the future, we promise.
Yeah. So when listening to this song, I started thinking of the footsteps of Katniss running through the woods of the arena, because you have that very beat kind of the piano playing, and that's a constant thing throughout the entire song. If you listen closely, you can still hear the piano. And as the song grew faster and louder, I started to feel the emotions of Katniss. I know I'm very connected with music, just to let you guys know. So I create feelings in oneself.
Yeah, you know.
So the motivation and drive she needed to stay alive in the arena was kind of the emotions and feelings I felt from her.
Right, yeah.
And so my mind also trailed off to the romance between Katniss and Peeta. That wasn't real at first, but as the games progressed and she started to accept the romance between them, Katniss started to feel something for Peeta.
Yeah, I definitely agree with, like, everything you said. I'll elaborate. So, also the part that Katniss is running through the woods, I kind of imagine that that's how the movie's gonna start, of her running into the woods and then finding Gale, or, like, running and, like, she's gonna shoot something and, you know, she's, that she's gonna, like, kill a squirrel or something, a rabbit, whatever, and, like, that's kind of what I imagine, like, that would be playing during the movie.
Yeah.
The beginning, like, that would be the very beginning. And, like, the piano keys, like, the Lionsgate, logo, kind of, like, WB for Harry Potter, that's the beginning part, and, yeah, you know.
So, I'm gonna post this song on the website, so...
Yeah, we'll come up with a new page for it.
Yeah, you guys, take a listen to it, and, send me your feedback, and I'll gladly respond to you, or if,
We can even read what you write on the podcast. You know, if you have good insight, definitely worth other fans to hear.
Feel free to send your suggestions for songs for the next week.
Yeah, definitely.
Because I'm big on classical music.
Yes.
So I know you guys are probably going to get sick of it by the second week, so I'll try to find...
You can have some modern music and then some classical music kind of... So send kind of like what songs you think might fit with it. And with the Hunger Games, whatever kind of song you want, something you wrote or whatever, and send it in, and we will listen to it and respond to you, and hopefully we can have it for next week's segment. And then you can also write what you were thinking about it, and we can read that.
Remember, our website is nightlock.weebly.com.
Weebly.
Weebly? Okay.
Yeah, I pronounce it Weebly.
Okay, nightlock.weebly.com. And so with that, we will move on to our final segment for this episode.
Yes, so the final segment is what? Who said that? this segment tests you as we give a selection of quotes from the chapters of discussion from each week's podcast episode. So for this one, I'm going to test Matt on a quote from chapter one.
It's going to be a really hard one, I can tell you
okay.
That. No, it's not.
Okay. We'll go easy on you since it's the first episode. I'm going to do one from chapter one since that's the chapter we covered today. Next week when we cover, we're each going to cover a chapter and we'll test each other on a quote from the chapter we covered.
And, we promise not to make the chapter analysis as extensive.
Yeah, because that was pretty long, so.
Because, this is our
the first chapter has so much involved in it. Second chapter and third we're going to do next week, hopefully. We're going to hopefully have it be shorter, so, you know, definitely a lot shorter, so.
And I know the reason why it was so long is because this is our first time really going insight on this.
This is just our first crack at it,
we've talked about it, but we really have been saying, no, don't say it, we'll save it for the podcast.
Yeah, like, we don't want to talk about Hunger Games unless we're recording, because, you know, we're going to get sick of talking to each other about it. But not about the Hunger Games, just... get to each other.
Exactly.
Okay, so I'm going to give you a quote. So, Matt and listeners. So, District 12 is where you can starve to death in safety. So, who do you think said that?
Wow, this is a really tricky one, Kira. I can tell it right now. I'm going to have to go with Katniss Everdeen.
You would be correct.
There
yes, Katniss Everdeen. And, so they're going to get harder. I mean, it's kind of hard in the first chapter because you only have really Katniss talking. You have Gale a little bit, but
no, because,
anything Gale says is kind of like, oh, that's definitely Gale. You know, he's definitely a strong personality kind of thing.
Well, I mean, once more characters are introduced, like we have Cinna and all these...
Say Cinna. He says Cinna. I don't know what's right. You know, I've heard a lot of different sayings.
Guys, I mean, just say whatever you like.
Yeah.
You know what we're talking about.
we'll go with it.
And so, it'll be more tricky once we get more characters involved, and it'll be easier to... It'll just be easier to make... different guesses.
Yeah. So, you're probably listening to this right now on the website, but if you're not, you might be listening to it through iTunes. So, if you're on iTunes or whatever. Our website is nightlock.weebly.com, and I'll spell that out for you. nightlock.weebly.com. So check us out there. We have a lot of cool stuff. We have news updates under Penum Post, clever name. And we have most of the casting there. I'll add the other districts, like the,
yes,
the ones that don't have names, like whatever. I think District 3?
District 6 and 10 and 3, I believe.
Okay, yeah. So those don't, the girl and boy tributes haven't actually been named. So, but we have, would you say 20 listed there?
Oh, we definitely, yeah. And Kira did biographies of the actors.
Yeah, I like looked on IMDb and kind of made my own bio, short bio. The main characters have a longer bio, but as you kind of go down the page, they kind of get shorter, you know, because a lot of them haven't been in major movies yet. So hopefully, you know, that will give them, they'll be the character they are. They won't be identified as anybody else.
I think the only two character actors I recognize are Josh Hutcherson and Liam Hemsworth.
Okay, yeah. Because I know Alexander Ludwig, and obviously Josh Hutcherson. I am a big fan of his. And Alexander Ludwig. And I saw Liam Hemsworth. What is his name?
Liam Hemsworth.
Hemsworth, right. I knew that. I saw him in The Last Song.
That was his first major movie.
Yeah, so having that be his first major movie, I thought he was okay in that. I mean,
we're not doing the Last Song podcast.
Yeah, so like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and subscribe us on YouTube. And you can find all those links through our website, which is nightlock.weebly.com.
So, thanks for listening. Hopefully.
Yep. So this is our pilot episode, and we'll be back soon. If we haven't met your expectations for this episode, hopefully we will for next episode.
So, thanks for listening, guys. Okay. And
yep.
I will get this up here if it lets me.
Yeah.
Okay. So gonna go.
Here we go again.
Yay! Okay.
Okay. Yeah.
Got computer working again.
Yes. So. All right. So thanks for listening.
You know what? Okay, here we go.